The Royal Gelatin Hour, directed by Rudy Valley. Tonight's star, Miss Jean Arthur.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and Company. With each passing week, competition in this dizzy business of building variety in front of a microphone grows keener and keener. Therefore, with each passing week, our reach, and we hope our grasp, extends further and further afield in order to bring you new people, new words, and new music. Tonight, for example, our cast has been assembled from Hollywood, Broadway, Russia, and the Irish Free State.
Well, Rudy, St. Paul, Minnesota, too.
Yes, and St. Paul, Minnesota, represented by that patriotic Mr. McNamee. From Hollywood comes
Jean Arthur, lovely star of The Plainsman and Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, in a one-act play by Colin Clements.
From Broadway,
two funny fellows, Frank Gabby and Edgar Bergen, which make three funny fellows when you stop to think about little Charlie McCarthy.
From Ireland,
Sarah Allgood, leading actress of the Irish Abbey Theatre, just arrived from Old Country to rehearse for a new theater guild play on Broadway.
From Russia,
Avicii Vronsky and Victor Babin, a two-piano combination whose opening American concert on Sunday was notably successful. Tonight marks their first radio appearance.
To all of which we add those fickly New England lads, the Connecticut Yankees.
Who's the Yankee, ain't it?
Quiet! Tumbling down, remember, in September, in the rain, the sun went out just like a dying ember, that September, in the rain. To every word of love I heard you whisper, the raindrops seemed to play a sweet refrain. Though spring is here, to me it's still September, that September in the rain. The backbone of any radio variety show continues to be those stalwart veterans of vaudeville who have learned by vast experience in front of audiences everywhere just how to act when the spotlight picks them out. Frank Gabby is such a fellow of infinite jest, tried in the fire of big time and small. Young in years but old in trooping days, he emerges forthwith. We present Frank Gabby.
Thank you. Hello, Rudy. Hello, boys. Hello, folks. You know, most comedians start by saying, a funny thing happened as I was coming into the studio. You know, that sounds so common, so what would you say, so picayune. I myself would never think of saying, a funny thing happened to me as I was coming into the studio, because nothing funny ever happened to me as I was coming into the studio. Until tonight. Tonight of all nights. The funniest thing happened to me as I was coming into the studio. Outside, a man came to me and he said, Mr. He said, Mr. He said, he said, it's too funny, I can't tell it. So now I will attempt something that has never been done on the air. Magic. I'm going to make myself disappear. Of course, making yourself disappear is nothing. I've made whole audiences disappear. Before I do this trick, I would like to get a committee of 9 or 10 gentlemen to step upon the stage to prove that this trick is legitimate. Can I get a committee of 9 or 10 gentlemen? If I can't get a committee of 9 or 10 gentlemen, can I get a committee of 5 gentlemen? 5 gentlemen to step upon the stage to prove that this trick is legitimate. If I can't get 5 gentlemen, can I get 1 gentleman? Is there a gentleman in the studio? If I can't get a gentleman, can I get a boy? Any little boy will do to step upon the stage to prove that this trick is legitimate.
I'll come up.
Very good, young man. Step right up here. Now, I want you to watch me closely. I'm going to shoot off this gun, and I, the great Gabby, am going to disappear from view right before your eyes. Now, don't stand too close to me, you know. This gun might go off and kill me before I finish my trick. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Well,
to prove that this trick is legitimate, I will ask you one question. You have never seen me before in your life, have you?
No, Papa.
What did I tell you about calling me Papa in the studio? The trick is ruined. Very well, I shall not be stopped. I will do another trick, but I must have an egg. Is there an egg in the audience?
If there was an egg in the audience, you'd have had it long ago.
Pardon me, I didn't catch that.
I didn't throw it.
Say, in 1 minute, I'll throw this microphone at you.
Yeah, and in 2 minutes, I'll throw it back.
Well, then there's no use throwing it. Listen here, you little pipsqueak. Listen. I like that word, pipsqueak. I think I'll use it again. Listen here, little pipsqueak. I have no time to bandy words.
Bandy what?
Bandy words. Didn't you ever hear of that expression before? Bandy words?
No, but I heard of bandy legs. You got them.
Well, aliquies. I got bandy legs from horseback riding. Say, listen, I'm a champion. When I'm in the saddle, I look like part of a horse.
Even when you're not in the saddle.
Yeah, I look like a horse. I understand. When I get you outside, though, you'll be as safe with me as a fish between two cats. What are you staring at? Have you ever seen anything like me before?
Yeah, but I had to pay admission.
No, don't mind him. I'm just a little perturbed. You see, I was in an automobile accident.
Yeah, he fell out of a patrol wagon.
Yeah, I thought. Say, give me a chance, will you? Remember, I'm the highest salaried actor in this show.
He gets paid off on the roof.
Beat me to it again.
Hey, you don't get paid for this, do you?
Oh, I don't get paid. You should see my salary.
Oh, no wonder you wear glasses. No kidding. How much money do you get?
Oh, how much money?
Yeah, how much?
Well, you know, curiosity killed a cat.
Yeah, you don't have to worry with your puss.
Say, listen, my boy, you can't talk to me that way. Remember, I've been a big hit in theaters all over the world. Why, the last theater I played, business was so terrific, the manager had to put up the ropes.
What for? To keep the crowds back?
No. To hang himself. Beat you to it that time.
Oh, boy, you ought to be arrested.
Me? What for?
For killing time.
I'm going to ignore him, and I'm going to tell a very funny story. I told this story to Robert Ripley.
Robert Ripley?
Rob Ripley. You know, I made this story up while taking a bath.
Believe it or not.
Believe it. Do you mean to say that you don't believe I make up my own stories?
No, I don't believe you took a bath.
Oh, well, we let that pass. But listen, you know that I'm the originator of every joke I tell.
You must be over 200 years old.
Let me see. I was born in... I am not.
Telegram for Mr. Gabby. I'll take it.
It's for me, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ah, this is swell. Fan mail arriving already. How many telegrams are there?
One.
One? That's funny.
It is funny. You sent out 27.
I sent out 27. Young man, you're a prevaricator. To think that I would stoop so low as to send out 27 telegrams to myself. You should be ashamed. I sent out 63. To be exact, 64. Do you mind if I read it?
No, go ahead.
All right. Dear Mr. Gabby, no, I didn't send this one. Dear Mr. Gabby, my husband has been laying around the house for years. Since he heard you on the air, he doesn't lay around the house anymore. He's outside the studio laying for you. Ladies and gentlemen, I will now do that trick of magic. I will make myself disappear. How do you get out of here?
Time of year, you're apt to find Graham McNamee reading a seed catalog. In other words, looking seedy. You see, even though Graham lives in a penthouse on Upper Broadway, he always has an elaborate flower garden. Presenting the penthouse gardener himself, Graham McNamee.
Well, Rudy, then I ought to know. You can't get artificial flavors that have the fragrance.
I'm in love with 2340567, the Social Security song. The ancient Arabs had a way of making symbols that today are numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Because of those Arabic digits, modern folks have got the fidgets. Everything must have a number, yes, or even men. Now I'm in love with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's my sweetie, also my address in heaven. Papa 804 was not contrary. He and 309 said we could marry. So I'll subtract that number from the family column, which I'll add to me. Then we'll have some little numbers all our own for our security. No. No matter what your rank or station, if you live in this great nation, you must have a number to protect you when you're gray. But long before you need a pension, when you have a good intention, you'll announce it by the numbers. Here is what you'll say. Oh, I'm in love with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's my sweetie, also my address in heaven. Papa 804 was not contrary. He and 309 said we could marry. So I'll subtract that number from the family column, which I'll add to me. Then we'll have some little numbers all our own for our security. One of the bright points about the year 1936 was the emergence of Miss Jean Arthur into full-fledged stardom in the prize-winning picture, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. You won't remember, but we did some neat predicting along those lines when Miss Arthur was with us last, back in 35. Tonight you will hear her in a short play by Colin Clements called Curtain, a play that may remind you of something by James M. Barrie. Miss Arthur will be assisted by Donald Cameron and Edith Spencer. Miss Jean Arthur in Curtain. Curtain, please. The scene, just a room. A not too prosperous-looking room in an eminently respectable boarding house somewhere within commuting distance of Broadway. A pretty young lady in a not very pretty dressing gown stands before us, looking out into a garden. There is a rap at the door.
Come in.
I thought I heard you bustling round, so I brought in your breakfast, ma'am.
Oh, good morning, Mrs. Keville. Bring the tray over here by the window. What time is it?
Near noon.
Really? So early. What an early riser I'm getting to be.
There you are, ma'am.
Pull up that chair. You brought a cup for yourself.
Oh, yes. I brought a cup for myself. I adore our chats. You know, just to sit and sip a bit of coffee with you, Miss Cameron's like mixing with quality.
Thank you. Oh, muffins, coffee, jam, bacon, an egg, and 4 pieces of butter.
Mm-hmm.
4. I don't know what shape I'll be in another week. Mrs. Keville, do you think I'm getting any fatter?
Well, I will say that you're a mite plumper than you was when you first come.
Only a mite. In 7 whole days, only a mite. Look again, Mrs. Keble.
Well, ma'am, if you really want the truth, I'd say you've took on a lot. A good lot since you first come.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Keble, thank you.
Well, most women don't like to put on, miss.
Maybe other women don't, but, well, you see, I've always been told that there was no other woman in the world like me.
I suppose there ain't no woman living that don't like to have that said to her once in a while.
Especially if she's what I used to be, an actress.
Oh, you never told me that before. Oh, and you seem so sort of respectable, too.
Oh, there's been no end of gossip. I'm told people say awful things about me because, well, you see, I've been in love with the same man for 10 years.
And not married to him?
No, hadn't the time.
Oh, dearie me.
But I'm going to take time now. That's the reason I've left the theater. Margaret that was is no more. Exit the old times. Enter the new. Goodbye, sweet yesterdays. Goodbye. Goodbye, big heartaches and great joys. Goodbye, hours of work and stolen hours of play. Goodbye, applause, music, flowers. They all march before me like brave little soldiers. The curtain has fallen for the last time on Margaret. Dear, beautiful, silly Margaret that was.
You mean you're giving up being an actress?
Done, once and for all. Never again. Never again will I trod the dear old boards.
Huh?
I mean be an actress, Mrs. Keble.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you say that.
I'm glad to be able to say it. It takes a very strong heart to say some things, Mrs. Keble.
Oh, seems like you really got a hankering to go back to it. That's too bad.
Ah, Mrs. Keble, don't we all sometimes hanker, as you say, for the old days and the old ways?
I suppose we do.
But that's being taken care of. 7 sugars in my coffee this morning. 7. Think of it. In another week, I'll have dimpled wrists. As for my ankles, I shudder. That's how I'm tricking that foolish little feather-brained Margaret, the actress.
I'm afraid I don't understand, ma'am.
Mrs. Kebble, no playwright, no matter how inexperienced he may be, ever made his heroine plump. Never.
Oh, so you're putting temptation behind you by letting yourself get fat?
No, I'm putting temptation behind my manager. Oh, I hope with all my heart that when he sees me, he'll tear up whatever new play he may have for me, take me off somewhere, scold me soundly, and then marry me.
Well, ma'am, if it'll keep you off the stage, I hope you get him.
I intend to get him. Why shouldn't I? I've made both him and myself famous. Why, I've even been his income, Mrs. Kepler.
And for all that, he never even proposed to you?
Proposed to me? I think maybe he did once or twice a long time ago.
Oh.
But what's a proposal or two when all life is before one, when there's so much work to do and so little time to get it done? Ah, when we are very young, Mrs. Kebble, we don't realize that sometime we'll come to want, oh, so much, all the little commonplace things. Dishwashing in nice splashy water. Orders to the cook. A work basket with buttons in it. Butcher's bills to worry about. Noisy children under one's feet. All those things every woman in the world thinks she despises. If she had to give them up, she'd rather die.
Oh, dear, there's somebody at the door.
Come back soon. There's so many things I want to ask
you.
Oh,
I will, dearie. I will.
Now, let's see. How does one make apple butter? Brandy. Peach brandy, how is it made? Sponge cake. 1 dozen or 2 dozen eggs. Does one put soda in cornbread? And if so, come in. Oh, you're back again, Mrs. Kebble.
A man to see you, ma'am.
A man to see me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how in the world did anyone know I was here?
Margaret.
Oh, it's you, Robert.
Who the devil else would it be?
Well, one never knows who might drop in on one down here in this sunny, peaceful solitude. You may go, Mrs. Kettle.
Yes, ma'am.
My word, where in the name of heaven did you get that makeup?
You mean my dressing gown and cap?
Is that what you call them?
Oh, they were given to me by an old admirer.
Have you any idea how you look?
I had the mirror taken out of my room the very first day I came here.
Yeah. What I want to know is, why did you so suddenly clear out of New York and land of all places here, in this godforsaken village?
Whimsy.
Whimsy never brought you to a place like this. Tell me the truth.
Need you ask? Look at that gorgeous sunshine, Robert.
There are better suns in Palm Beach. Now, don't lie to me, Margaret. Why are you here? Here and in those frightful clothes. You look like the mother of a large family.
Do I? Do I really? Oh, say it again, Robert.
I may say much worse if you don't tell me why you're here.
I will tell you. Robert, for the first time in, I hate to think how long, I've run off to be myself. I'm being domestic. All the joy of it. Mrs. Kebble, she's the landlady, is teaching me how to bake bread. Last night I washed dishes, piles of them. Tomorrow I'm going to try to milk the cow.
Milk the cow? Look here, Margaret. There's a train back to town in half an hour. Get your things together.
But I'm not going back to town.
Now, look here, Margaret. You've been domestic for 7 long days. That's quite enough for any woman.
Robert, will you marry me?
For what the... you know what a busy man I am. Haven't I wasted 7 days trying to find you without taking another one out to marry you?
Will you marry me? Oh, we could have such a sweet apartment in town, and maybe I could learn to cook things.
Sweet apartment. Drafty and thoroughly uncomfortable. I've lived in peace at my club for years, and if I should leave now,
Oh, for the third and last time, Robert, will you marry me?
Are you playing a part or what?
I don't know, Robert. I'm never quite sure anymore whether I'm acting or not. But I believe if I am acting, this is the most serious part I've ever played.
You know very well that with just one nod of that pretty head of yours, you could have any one of 50 of the best men in New York. You could have them all at once if you insisted.
Speak for yourself, Robert.
I am. The 50 includes me. For years, Margaret, I begged you, I beseeched you, I implored you. I did everything in the world but crawl around after you on my knees.
Now I remember. There was some reason why I wouldn't marry you. That was it, Robert. That was it. You didn't get down on your knees to me.
Nothing of the sort. If you'd ever given me half a chance, I'd have followed you the length of Fifth Avenue on my knees. Oh, no. You insisted, always insisted that your work, I think you used to call it art in those days, came first.
Oh, so it did in those days. Oh, one has so many ridiculous ideas when one is so very young. Robert, I suppose you couldn't get down on your knees now, could you?
What? Get down on my knees? Of course not.
Oh, then farewell, romance.
Yes, farewell, and a good job it is, too. Right now, when I'm about to tackle the greatest play I've ever produced, you suddenly develop temperament. Run off. Hide yourself. And I thought I understood women.
But why didn't you tell me in the first place that you had a new play? What's it about?
Well, a gypsy girl who...
Gypsy! I can wear a black wig. What's my first entrance like?
Marvelous. Listen to this.
No, don't read it to me. Tell me about it. How many changes do I have?
12.
Not really. 12? Oh, it's too good to be true. Modern?
Ultra modern.
Oh, how long is my part?
You say everything. The others just answer yes and no.
Oh. And the end. What's the end like?
While bells from the distant church are softly pealing, you die on the sofa in your lover's arms. Curtain.
No. No, that won't do. No, I've played tragedies for the last 3 seasons, Robert. We've got to have a happy ending. We've got to have a happy ending.
Well, then we'll rewrite the last act. There's a possibility of a happy ending. You can marry a young Russian prince who comes in as atmosphere in the first act. That'll make him earn his salary. Rehearsals begin day after tomorrow. Now, run along, get your things on. That's a good child.
Oh, I shall, Robert, I shall. I can't wait to read the play.
We'll read it together on the train back to town. Let's be off. I'll send someone for your trunks tomorrow.
Trunks? I haven't any.
You down here without trunks?
Trunks.
No baggage?
Trunks. Trunks belong to Margaret the actress. Oh, you'll have to go back to town alone, Robert. I'd forgotten for the moment. I've retired from the theater.
Now, look here, Margaret. If you think...
No, there's no good arguing. There's no good talking. I tell you, Margaret the actress is no more. I said goodbye to her this morning. I've been saying goodbye to her for 7 days. She was hard to get rid of. All that is left is nice, cozy Margaret the housewife. You have no use for her in your theater.
Retired from the theater? Don't talk such blasted foolishness. My play, what'll I do? I'll lose every cent I've got. I'll be ruined.
After all, these years you've worked so hard. Oh, that'll be too bad. That'll be too bad.
I tell you, I'll end in the poorhouse, like every other fool that tries to produce plays.
Oh, no, Robert.
Oh, yes, Margaret.
Oh, that would be disastrous. Robert, will you... No, I'd forgotten. I asked you that once, 3 times before.
I will. By George, I will.
Will what?
You know very well what. Margaret, you little devil, will you marry me?
No, Robert, I will not.
Well, I give it up. What's the matter with you today now, Margaret?
It's no good. Go back to town with your old play. Leave me alone with my broken heart.
Margaret, I'm down on my knees to you. Will you marry me?
Say it again.
I will not say it again. I'll be...
Shh. Sweetly, Robert, sweetly.
Margaret, my dear... Will you marry me?
Let me see. When?
Now. Tomorrow. Next day. Whenever you will.
Yes. Robert, I think I will marry you. Now, get up and kiss me.
Margaret, I've kissed you. Thing I've wanted to do for 10 years.
And for almost 10 years I've wanted you to.
Don't ever go away from me again, Margaret.
Don't ever let me.
WEAF, New York.
I can't help thinking that 10 years was an unbelievably long time to wait, especially when you stop to picture to yourself Miss Jean Arthur. However, the Royal Gelatin Hour moves on into Act 2, with Edgar Bergen, Sarah Allgood, and 2 visitors from Baltic Russia awaiting your pleasure. The 2 Russians who play 2 pianos are Vitya Vronsky and Viktor Babin. Until last Sunday, these 2 attractive young people were known only to a comparative few professionals in this country, and that by virtue of a scanty number of foreign recordings. Their American debut at Town Hall created something of a sensation in musical circles here, a fact which our top hat spies were quick to report. Our lookouts also declare that in private life, their attachment is romantic as well as musical, a circumstance that may or may not account for the smooth manner in which they work together. You will hear first a portion of the ballet music from Borodin's Prince Igor, Vronsky and Babin. Thank you.
someday, so why not now? Oh, won't you let me try to show you how things what you're missing? Oh, it's a shame you'll miss the kissing and the rest of the game. In open spaces where men are men, a chicken never waits till she's a hen. Don't keep me waiting, for I do vow you'll know it someday, so why not now?
Presenting now a great lady of the theater, Miss Sarah Allgood, original leading woman in the Irish Abbey Theater. Professional people, actors, actresses, producers, and directors will tell you that the Abbey Theater was, and no doubt still is, the finest acting company ever assembled. Our guest was one of the original members, a group of enthusiastic amateurs who met with William Butler Yeats, John Synge, and Lady Gregory 30 years ago to found a native Irish theater. The early days of the Abbey Players were hard days, but in the end, they won the admiration of the entire English-speaking world, a triumph in which Miss Allgood had a full share throughout the years. She is currently in New York to play the lead in a new Theater Guild production, now in rehearsal. I'm sure you will find her as charming as we have found her in the informal talks which led up to this interview. From Dublin Town, by way of London, Miss Sarah Allgood. Miss Allgood, is this your first radio appearance? Have you ever broadcast before?
Oh, yes, indeed, Rudy. I've been on the wireless many times at home, over the British Broadcasting Corporation in London.
Do you find much difference between broadcasting over here and in England?
A very great difference, Rudy. And the difference is this, my boy. Over here, you get paid.
Well, that's an old American custom, Miss Allgood. It's called the payoff.
Is it indeed? Now, you know, Rudy, there's not much you could tell me about an old American custom. I've been over here 5 times in all, and I'll bet you a guinea to a sixpence. I could take you places in New York you've never been yourself.
And I wouldn't dare to take you up. I understand your first visit was a pretty exciting one.
Yes, we did start off a bit of a row. That was in 1911, when George C. Tyler, bless his heart, brought the Abbey Players over for the first time. We were opening up with the Playboy of the Western world, and word got round that the play was not entirely complimentary to the Irish nation as a whole. Well, a bunch of the boys who called themselves the Gopher Gang decided they'd break up the proceedings. The police got wind of it, and we were warned not to show ourselves outside the theater, which we didn't. Sure enough, just before the curtain time, the Gopher Boys began collecting inside a pub across the street in great numbers.
And what happened?
Nothing at all, hardly. The police waited until all those mad Irish gossoons got inside the saloon. And then they up and locked the door on the outside.
Quite a situation, I'd say.
And so would I. A company of Irish actors playing an Irish play written by an Irish writer. A great many more Irish trying to stop them from playing. And a lot of Irish cops leaping to the rescue. There's just one man had my sympathy out of the whole crowd of them.
And who was that?
The bartender inside that pub. Oh, but you know as well as I do, Rudy, the Irish as a people are inclined to be contentious and derogatory. You know, they'd rather fight than be lonesome.
Yes, I can well understand that, being Irish myself.
Ah, you know? I didn't know that. Why, you don't look Irish.
Well, that's the French-Canadian and Yankee influence, Miss Allgood.
Uh-huh.
Sure, and all my ancestors on my mother's side came over from good old County York. How do you like the brogue?
Well, you know, Rudy, I believe it's true what my friend Charles Lawton said about you.
Yes?
Yes, indeed. He said you had the clearest, most pleasing English diction of anyone on the wireless in America.
Faith, and that's a great compliment. Faith, and it is, and it is, and it is. But, sure, and how about the brogue?
Well, now, just between you and me, Rudy.
Yes?
It's terrible. Let me give you an idea of a real Dublin brogue in a poem I know. You've no law against reciting poetry in this country, have you?
Not that I know of.
Well, I just wanted to be sure. You know, you Americans are such great ones for passing new laws. Well, this poem is about an Irish girl that went to church to say a prayer for a husband. And with all reverence, mind you, this is what she said. St. Joseph, let you send me a comrade true and kind. For the one I'm after seeking, it beats the world to find. There's Christy Shea's a decent lad, but he's too lank and tall. And Shannon Burke will never do, for he's a foot too small. John Heffernan has gold enough, but sure he'd have me best with talking of the wife that died the year before we met. Young Pat Delaney suits me mind, but he's a trifle wild. And Tim I've known too well itself from since I was a child. Old Dennis Morrissey has pigs and cattle in the byre, but somehow, well, I don't fancy him the far side of the fire. I'd have St. Joseph send me a comrade rich and kind. And if it's Rudy Valley, well, maybe I mightn't mind. Of course, Rudy, under different circumstances, I could have put another name in there, such as, well, we'll say, Robert Taylor, for instance.
Sally, sure, and you wouldn't do that.
No, Rudy, indeed I wouldn't. Ah, sure, you're a darling man, a darling man. And now, Alana, let me wish you an Irish wish, and it's this. May you be half an hour in heaven before the devil knows you're dead.
Indulge in a lot of superlatives, but I'll simply say that when the 20th Century Fox film On the Avenue comes to your town, don't miss it. It's one of those unusual films, and the score by Berlin, the old master, is one of his best. Here's one of the tunes from the picture. You're Laughing at Me.
Valley's Royal Gelatin Hour coming to a close.